Hey, welcome to Cinema Scene on Gardner-Webb University Radio, WGWG.org. I'm Noel T. Manning II, hanging out with...
Jen Guberman.
Jen Guberman, welcome back. How are you?
Pretty good. It's a little toasty outside, but how about you?
Toasty outside. It's not 112 degrees like it was last week.
This is true.
So it's a little better. It's only 80 degrees.
But it's confusing because it starts off in the 50s, and yes. So you dress warm, and then yes. Midday you're dying.
Yes, and then when the sun goes down, it automatically drops another 10 or 15 degrees. Yeah. So that's the beauty of fall here in North Carolina. A lot of stuff to talk about today. We've got several movies. If you've never joined us for this show, we do talk movies at Cinema Scene, so things that relate to cinema and film. We do have some reviews to give you. Also, we'll give you the box office results and some interesting box office results from last week. Also, we'll look at home delivery, some things you may want to check out at home or may not want to check out, depending on kind of where we are. And also, we've got a trailer of the week. And so we've got, I think, four movies to review. Between the two of us, I'm not a math major, but I think those are the numbers that I came up with. So, Jen, where do you want to start this week?
We can start with the box office.
All right, let's do that. Dive in.
So this was for the weekend of September 29th to October 1st. And yes, it's already October. So we'll start with number five, which was Flatliners, which came out on the 29th. They made $6.5 million. The Lego Ninjago movie came in fourth with $11.6 million.
Hey, I'm proud of you. Ninjago, you did great. I butcher that name every time, so Ninjago.
Only reason I know is because I've babysat young boys before, so I've heard it somewhere before.
All right.
And then actually the top three were all really, really close. You have American Made in number three with $16.7 million, It with $16.9 million, and then Kingsman, The Golden Circle, with $16.93 million.
Yeah, that's really unusual to have three that close, and honestly just a little bit separating them. Decisions weren't, the final tallies didn't come in until really late Sunday before they said, okay, yeah, this is it. So you've got some interesting trivia, because at one point, I think Saturday it looked like It was going to regain the number one slot. American Made, this is the lowest... I think the lowest Tom Cruise film in a long time as far as making money on that opening weekend. But it is October, so this is not typically when you're going to make big, big, big bucks. So what were your thoughts on those three being so close? What do you think was the reason for that?
Well, first of all, I know all three of those, I mean, they've got some big names. Well, It not as much, but they have some big names. And then Kingsman, the first one, I feel like I saw a comparison where the numbers were pretty similar in how much they
right.
made. So I feel like if you've got this following, that might be why you had so many people
right,
come see the
right.
second one. And It has just been breaking a lot of records, which
yeah.
is really exciting. I've got fun fact on
yeah,
that one if you don't mind me
it.
Sharing.
Dive in.
So that one, I think I mentioned like a week or two ago that it actually broke into the top five movies in 2017
right.
with over 290.7 million total. But it actually crawled into the number one R-rated horror movie slot, beating out The Exorcist.
Oh, wow. Really?
So,
wow.
Very recently.
Okay.
I thought that was really exciting because that record hasn't been broken in a long time.
Yeah, that is amazing. That surprises me. Yeah, and this is a film that's got some staying power. We're 4 weeks in, and really by this weekend, it'll be 5 weeks that this movie has been out. And it's still within the top five, top three, top two, which is pretty incredible for really any film to maintain that, especially a horror film, because horror films typically are going to do extremely well that opening weekend and maybe a weekend after that, but then you'll see a dramatic drop normally. But we're not seeing that with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why that it's just continuing to hold strong. Maybe it's the competition, or maybe it's just the kind of film it is. I enjoyed it. I thought it did a great job taking the Stephen King book and taking it into a little different direction. Really going to do this film in two chapters. So you're going to have a sequel coming out that will look at things from a little different perspective, which is interesting. So any more thoughts you want to share on It?
No.
Now you're drawn into horror type films.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is the reason this movie is continuing to just hold strong several weeks in?
Well, I think first of all, you've got the fact that I believe it was like 27 years ago is when the first one came or the original came out. So you had a lot of people who liked that one and it was kind of a classic. And then also the fact that there was a book. So you have Stephen King fans, people who liked the book, people who liked the first movie. And then also the fact that maybe this is just me personally, and maybe I'm a little desensitized to horror, but I feel like it was handled in a way that people who wouldn't normally watch horror could handle it a little better than other horror movies that are just over the top. And also, I mean, it did kind of have a little bit of a feel of Stranger Things as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Partially with the casting of Finn Wolfhard. So I think that it kind of just appealed to a lot of people with that aspect too. The way they did the trailer was very similar to Stranger Things. Right. So you've got that crowd who kind of fell into it.
Yeah, and Stranger Things really is has kind of turned people on to this kind of coming-of-age story, but within a horror-type genre. And, you know, they took a page from Stephen King. So it was interesting that we're seeing that play out on the big screen again with it. So, yeah, good thoughts there. Movies opening in theaters this weekend in wide release, we do have Blade Runner 2049 in wide release. And we've got a few others, but that's the one that's getting a lot of buzz. Critics are already praising this for the most part. It's got the Broadcast Film Critics seal of approval already. And so there's some high expectations for this film. It's a long film. It's nearly 3 hours long. So it's a long film. So, you know, if you go in, make sure you have plenty of popcorn and food and make sure you've made that bathroom break beforehand, unless you don't mind walking out several times. So that's the movie to look for this weekend at the box office. And I'm expecting it to be number one. That's my prediction at this point. Like I said, there are a couple of others, but that's the one I think that is going to be the one to beat this week. Let's talk about some films that are in limited release and available on demand. And also, I've got a review of a film from last weekend's top three. So I'll let you dive in first, Jen, whichever one you want to chat about first.
We'll start with Woodshock. I personally didn't get a chance to watch this one. This one was released on limited release on September 22nd. It's a drama thriller about a young woman played by Kirsten Dunst. She's torn between her fractured emotional state and the reality-altering effects of a potent drug. And again, that one was Woodshock.
Okay.
And go ahead.
And that is one of those that's really in limited release. It's got some names that are recognizable, but we're not expecting huge things for this particular film.
And then also we have Shot, which is also came out on September 22nd. This one is a drama, and it's actually about a man who is accidentally shot by a teenage boy, and the story follows the impact of the shooting on the man, who already has a rocky relationship with his wife, the physical impact it has on him, and the emotional and social impact it has on the teenage boy who accidentally shot him. I got to see this one, and I actually really liked it. I wasn't sure what I would think of it, especially because you had actually told me in advance that a lot of it was in real time, which I think isn't often used.
Yeah.
But I think it was really effective in the way they did that.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It was a film that, when you talk about a movie that just kind of dives in, within 5 minutes, the story really starts. You realize this guy overworks himself. He's a sound engineer for films, and you see him kind of in his element, in his work, and gets a text from his wife, goes to meet her at a coffee shop, and you realize that's all about signing divorce papers. And so you see that because of his heavy working, he just didn't have a chance to really care about the things that mattered in life. And walking down the street, the stray bullet hits him, and bam, that's when it launches into real time. I love the visuals, the dual screen. Mm-hmm. I felt like it was 24, the TV show 24, where you're seeing the real-time elements play out, and you're seeing the story of the kid on the run who accidentally, you know, pulled the trigger, and then the man and his wife dealing with what happens there. You know, once it launched into the, you know, you see them going in the ambulance, seeing them in the operating room. Not for the squeamish. I felt like I was watching, you know, trauma, life in the ER, you know, the reality show aspect of what was going on there. Tell me some more of your thoughts about seeing those different angles, because you're seeing things from his perspective. You're also at times not hearing any music. You're hearing the beeps of the machines. You're hearing the doctors talking in the background. Talk a little bit about that and how that brought you in, or did it bring you in as a viewer?
I think it definitely brought me in, but the only downside I feel like to the whole side-by-side view of it was they built on the man who got shot a lot more than they did on the teenage boy. And so I don't know about you, but I personally had a hard time convincing myself, oh, hey, you gotta watch what's happening with the boy too. So I kept like focusing on the guy in the hospital and what was happening to him, because you know, you already kind of grow attached to him a little bit and you feel bad for him. And so you want to know what happens to him. Right. Whereas the boy, you're like, oh, well, you did this, even if it was an accident. So it's really hard until they start to show like how it impacted the boy as well. But I think it was really effective in the way they mostly did like the kinds of sounds that that guy would hear and sometimes switch to his angle, trying to, you know, crane his neck up to see like when he's in the hospital bed and things like that.
Yeah, even those Dutch angles where it's kind of at really sideways and you're seeing if he were on that gurney looking up at the doctors. That was creative storytelling techniques for me.
And I think they did it well, too, where it wasn't too much, but it, like, helped put you in his shoes more, especially with the real time. I feel like if they would have jumped around more, then it would have been a little overkill.
Yeah, yeah, and that whole middle act really was kind of real time. And then the last act of the film jumped into the aftermath, you know, once he gets home. You know, what happens to him, but what happens to the kid as well. And I agree. It's the poster for the movie said shot, you know, one shot, three lives changed. But it did mostly focus on Noah Wiley's character, Noah Wiley from ER and also from the Librarians TV series. His character was named Mark Newman and his wife was Phoebe. But you really don't, I feel like Phoebe and then the kid, those really did feel like secondary characters. I mean, they were leads, but the story was more focused on the victim and the victim of the shot. Yeah. Okay. So any other thoughts you want to share? What, anything did not work for you or any other things that did not work for you?
I wasn't a huge fan of the ending. I felt like it was a little abrupt without spoiling too much there. But overall, I gave it an A-, because I thought it was really well done. There were just a couple minor things.
Yeah, I thought the first act was really strong. I did like the first part of that second act in real time, but I felt it at points a little bit of sluggishness for me. And there was some weird like drug flashback hallucinogenic trip that you're seeing this character go on where he's trying to kind of relive some of his life stories. And that felt weird to me. It didn't really, it didn't provide much to me more than just him, you know, his life flashing before his eyes. But I didn't really like the way they did that. The third act, I thought was okay, but I'm with you. I think it did kind of had that kind of abruptness to it. I gave it a B-. I thought it was a good film, not a great film, but I think definitely one worth watching. For me, the visual techniques are worth watching, if nothing else. I would highly recommend that. Awesome. All right. And that movie is called Shot. It is in limited release now and also available on demand. All right. What else do you have to review?
We've got one more called So Be It. Be just by itself, not B-E.
The letter B.
Yes.
As in Sesame Street. Okay. All right.
And this one is coming out on October 6th. It's a drama about a young girl who lives with her mentally ill mother and her agoraphobic neighbor when she decides to search for details about her mysterious past. I thought this one was really cute, but not like make you feel good cute through necessarily the whole thing.
All right.
But there were a lot of emotions in this one where they've got some scenes that are cuter and like the touching things and then some that are, you know, a little more difficult. I think the young girl, Heidi, played by Talitha Bateman, if I pronounced that right.
She's not here, so if you got it wrong, we'll get an email and we'll correct it next time.
I think she did a fantastic job. I'm not usually a huge fan of kid actors because I feel like it's really easy for it to be over the top.
Right.
But I think when it came down to the scenes where she had to have more of a sad moment or a breakdown, I feel like she was actually really convincing about that and it wasn't too overdone. She conveyed the emotions really well. So I think they did a great job casting her.
Okay. And what other things did you appreciate about this movie?
I liked the score. I thought it was well done and contributed to the emotions throughout it. I feel like that's one thing I tend to not notice as much, but I did notice a score in this one, and I thought it really worked for it. I thought the pacing was pretty good. There were a couple slow moments, but overall, it was pretty good. And as a viewer, too, you can't help but to like feel really attached to the characters, and you want to know this girl's story, and you want to know the mom's background, the neighbor's background, and all of this other stuff. So it kind of keeps you paying attention even through some of the slower moments. Yeah.
And what rating would you give So Be It?
I gave it an A.
An A rating. All right. Well, you know, you've been able to engage in some films that you probably wouldn't go see at theaters, or you wouldn't, you know, probably go rent from Redbox. Talk a little bit about what that's been like for you, you know, the past month or so, to be able to see some of these films that may literally fly under the radar.
it's been kind of nice. Although at the same time, like we've talked about in previous episodes, sometimes not so much.
Yeah, depending on the movie.
Some of them aren't great, but they make for good conversation. So right. There's always that. I do like being able to kind of stretch outside of it, because if I'm going to actually go to theaters, since movies can be a little pricey for a college student, I'm going to make sure it's something I really want to see first. So it's been nice to be able to kind of like stretch outside of like the few movies a year that I would typically go okay. see.
All right, good deal. And that movie, So Be It, an A rating for Jen Guberman. Movie last weekend that was in the top three at the box office, Tom Cruise stars in American Made, based on a true story of Barry Seal, who was a TWA pilot who was recognized by the CIA for some hidden talents. So they hired him to be a recon spy and basically do photography surveillance over Central America. Once there, he was captured by some drug traffickers who talked him into basically becoming a drug trafficker while he was working for the CIA. Then the CIA turned him into a gun runner, and ultimately, out of all of this, he became a millionaire. Tom Cruise's character, always a risk taker, and that was evident in the first 5 minutes. I'm not giving anything away here, but you see him as this TWA pilot, and he's going through just the standard routines day after day after day, flying from one place to the other, one place to the other. And you get a sense that he's bored with his life. And there's a scene where he's flying an overnight flight. The co-pilot says, "Hey, I'm going to crash. You know, wake me up when we get over Texas." So they're going probably coast to coast. And so Barry Seal, the character, he's planes on autopilot. He looks over, sees his co-pilot asleep. He realizes that most of the people in the back, the passengers, are sleeping. So he decides to take it off of autopilot and then sends the plane into a nosedive. And then you see all the oxygen masks falling down, and you see the people kind of shaking. And then he levels it out, and the co-pilot wakes up, and he comes on the intercom, says, "I'm sorry, folks, we hit a little bit of turbulence." And so you see that he just wants to do something different. And so him taking this path of working for the CIA, working for the drug lords, and ultimately end up working for the White House, it was all about risk and taking chances. And so the story question that really drives this whole film is, will his risky choices eventually catch up with him and or his family? And that plays out. He's a father and, you know, has a wife. And at one point, he comes home, and this is within the first 30 minutes of the film. He comes home and says to his family in the middle of the night, "Okay, we've got to go." "What do you mean we're going?" "Well, we're moving." So that's the point that she finds out, okay, he's not working for TWA anymore. Action, adventure, political crime drama based on a true story. The setting for this, it takes place between 1978 and 86. And so anybody that's familiar with history of that time, you'll hear names like Escobar, Salazar, Noriega, Ronald Reagan, Ollie North, all of those come into play. And there's even a interesting little nod to an Arkansas governor by the name of Bill Clinton that shows up in one of these scenes as well. Really an interesting movie to explore. They used archive footages, great acting with Tom Cruise. The director also directed Cruise in the movie Edge of Tomorrow. He also did Mr. and Mrs. Smith and The Bourne Identity. So understands action, how to do action films. The story was really fascinating, but there were a few plot holes. And again, a little sluggish at times. I think the movie was just shy of 2 hours, and it could have benefited from probably having a few scenes chopped out. So an hour and 45 minutes probably would have been better for this. And you hear me say that a lot when we talk, is the story and that kind of sluggishness. Some of that could be the editing. Some of it could be they're trying to put too much in there. For this one, I think they were trying to tell you too many different aspects of the history of this guy and what happened. But definitely worth viewing. I'm giving this also a B-minus rating. And the movie's called American Made because America made this character a millionaire. So that's where American Made comes from. So that movie is in theaters now, and you can check that out if you so choose, if you like those kinds of things. Also, some great comic relief. There are times when you see Tom Cruise's character looking at the camera, but it's not breaking that fourth wall. It really is a video camera that you see him set up, and he's kind of telling his story in case something happens to him. And so somebody's able to piece together his story, and so you see the timestamp at the bottom, like the old video cameras at the bottom. So worth checking out. Definitely worth checking out. Well, for home delivery, there are three films to chat about. A Bomb of the Summer, and another sequel, and then really another Stephen King novel adaptation that I'm actually looking forward to that is really original for Netflix. So let's talk about these, Jen.
Sure. We have Transformers The Last Night. This came out on September 26th for DVD. I did not get a chance to see this one, but apparently it's about humans at war with the Transformers and Optimus Prime is gone. The key to saving the future lies within the history of Transformers on Earth and ends up in the hands of an unlikely alliance.
Yeah, I gave this a D+ when it was in theaters. I have seen all the other ones. My wife wanted to go see it because she likes seeing Mark Wahlberg without a shirt. So that's why she showed up for this movie. And she likes action movies, too. The story was very convoluted. They tried to do way too many things. And the scenes just kind of went on and on and on. And there was a lot of action and too much action. And there were times you're watching it and you see flashes of light and you see crashes and chaos and you find yourself asking, okay, what did I just watch? You know, how is that different from the other scene? So I gave it a D+. Not a big fan of this movie. I have liked others in the franchise. I have liked others in the Transformers franchise, but definitely not this one. So no recommendation from me on that one.
We also have Gerald's Game, which is the Stephen King one that you mentioned. It came out on September 29th. On Netflix, because it's a Netflix original. It came out really shortly after. I saw the articles popping up about its release coming up shortly after it came out.
Right.
Which I found kind of surprising that it came out so close to the release of it. But Gerald's Game is based on another Stephen King novel where a couple goes to a remote lake house to spice up their marriage. And when Jessie's husband dies unexpectedly, she's left handcuffed to their bed frame to face her own monsters.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a really interesting concept, but from what I've read, it's apparently really well done in the way that, because when you read about it, a woman handcuffed to her bed and kind of stuck there for whatever period of time, I feel like it'd feel a little slow, kind of the whole sluggish thing you were talking about. But a lot of people were saying that at no point do you really feel like she's alone.
Right.
So I'm really interested in how they managed to go about making that one something that you get sucked into.
And that is available now on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think the book this was based on came out back in 92. There was something that popped up on my news feed a while ago, and it was talking about some of the biggest books of that year. There were a couple of Stephen King's books of that same year. Dolores Claiborne also was one of those during that same time period. So, yeah, Gerald's Game. There are just so many Stephen King films or TV shows, and it's pretty incredible the amount of adaptations that we've seen of his work in various ways, and just it continues. He's pretty amazing from that standpoint. Another sequel, also available in home release.
This one is Pirates of the Caribbean: Dead Men Tell No Tales, and it came out on streaming and DVD and whatnot on October 3rd.
And whatnot. Now, what is the whatnot aspect of that?
Other DVDs and Blu-rays. but I saw this one prior to its DVD release. I personally enjoyed it, but I've only ever seen one other one in the franchise.
Okay.
Which I know is a little unusual. I feel like for somebody my age, I feel like everybody's seen all of them.
Okay.
And I've seen one.
All right.
So I was kind of going on limited knowledge on the background of the characters. So on its own, as like a standalone movie,
right,
I personally enjoyed it,
yeah,
but I can't personally speak to if it held up to the others.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's an interesting point you bring up, because to me, as I watched this film, I felt that this could easily be a reboot or a kind of a relaunch of the franchise in a way of taking it into a little different direction. Mm-hmm. Sure, it was helpful to have the background knowledge of who some of the other characters were, but you didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
In order to appreciate the story. And that was one of the things that struck out with me on this, is the last film that came out in this, I was not a fan of. And so I was reluctant going in with that kind of baggage of the last film, going, okay, gosh, are we going to see much of the same? And I felt this was a fun ride. And I don't remember my rating, but it was either B+ or A-. It was pretty close to what you had. I thought it was great as a standalone piece, and as far as a sequel, I think it, or part of a franchise, it worked really well also. So I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Good deal. Well, trailer of the week. Let's talk your trailer of the week.
I picked Happy Death Day, which comes out on October 13th, which is also a Friday the 13th, which I feel like is always just convenient for people who come up with horror movies. If there's an October and it's Friday the 13th, it works out perfect. But this is a horror movie. It's about a girl who has to relive the day of her death until she can discover her killer's identity. So when I saw the trailer, it kind of made me think a little bit of if you mix like either a Groundhog Day or 12 Days of Christmas with like a slasher flick.
Yeah, yeah, I felt the same way.
It's interesting, but I'm really excited about
that. Yeah, I am too. I saw the trailer and I said, this is something I can get into. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to definitely watch this when this comes out. We were talking about Stephen King and we were talking about Ed and horror films, Happy Death Day. So I'll give you some essential Stephen King horror supernatural adaptations that I think are worthy of seeing. I did a survey, so this is all kind of crowdsourced from Facebook friends who chimed in, and so I'll give you five films, not in any particular order except alphabetical order, so I guess it is some type of order. Carrie from 1976, the Sissy Spacek version, also starring a guy who was in a TV show, The Greatest American Hero, William Catt. In this movie as well, or in this film as well. Brian De Palma directed this, so 1976 version, Carrie. Definitely one to check out. The Dead Zone was also a favorite. Both the original film in 83, and then there was a TV series on the USA Network from 2002 to 2007, and both of those were solid. I would recommend that. It, that was just released, it's still in theaters now. Definitely a must-see if you're looking for a Stephen King adaptation. Salem's Lot from 1976, the TV miniseries, still pretty creepy. I remember reading this book in high school and being creeped out and sleeping with every light on that was anywhere near me. And I still do that if I read horror films. So, hey, I'm not shy about telling where I am there. And then The Shining from 1980. With Shelley Duvall and Jack Nicholson, and directed by Stanley Kubrick. Those are some essential must-see Stephen King adaptations. You want to throw in any Stephen King adaptations? No? You're good?
Although I did like, I haven't seen the older version of Carrie, but I personally enjoyed the newer one.
Okay.
But again, I can't compare
it. But you did enjoy it.
But yeah.
So you'd recommend
really well
that.
Done. Mm-hmm.
All right, good deal. Well, Jen Guberman, thanks for hanging out, as always, right here on Cinema Scene on WGWG.org. Do you have any final thoughts or comments or recommendations for our listeners out there?
Nothing from me.
All right, till next time, I'm Noel Manning. That's Jen Guberman, and this is WGWG. That's a wrap.